Okay. So we've got a couple of things to cover this morning. Primarily, our final ceremony for the series on the Jukai ceremonies. That ceremony is called recognition, and I'll get to that in a minute. I wanted to talk a little bit about Samanta Bhadra, whose festival we celebrated this morning. And I wanted to talk about it partly because Samanta Bhadra really came to mind during the talk that we did last week on the Ketchum Yaku, following where the blood of the Buddha's, the precepts of the blood of the Buddha's lead. And our, and that sort of sub-theme of following the path of the Dharma. The image that comes to mind for me of Samanta Bhadra, well, first of all, just in general, Samanta Bhadra is a bodhisattva of universal or selfless love. And while kind of personal and romantic love is a subset of that, this is a slightly different thing. This is sort of more like the parental love that we might have for our children, and is the love which has the wisdom and the wish for well-being in beings. And so Samanta Bhadra, as we were kind of reciting the scriptures today, there are many different facets of Samanta Bhadra's love, and there was ample example of that during the scriptures. One of the things that, for me, Samanta Bhadra really embodies is this idea of endless training and what that kind of entails. It might seem that endless training, and this goes back to that Ketchum Yaku, it might seem that endless training means, you know, we might think, oh God, that means I'm going to go forever without finding what I'm looking for. And that's not what it's talking about. It's talking about the willingness to actually understand that we, by finding the path, by finding the practice, we have actually found what we're looking for. And that by continuing to be willing to just put it into practice day after day, over time, we deepen and expand our understanding of what we're looking for. We give expression to compassion, love, and wisdom in our life. And as we go through our life and we put these teachings into practice, we put the meditation and the precepts into practice, we're deeply giving expression to the reality of life, deeply giving expression to the reality of Buddha Dharma. So there's this image again of Samanta Bhadra riding his elephant through a jungle, and the elephant is just patiently going forward, removing obstacles that appear in the path, gently, patiently removing obstacles. Sometimes it goes around things, sometimes it, you know, picks up a log and sets it aside, again, gently, patiently. Elephants are known for their care and their patience, as well as their strength and their determination. And to me, that is really the kind of embodiment of the love of Samanta Bhadra, that willingness to just patiently go through our life, apply the Dharma to the situations that arise, apply our practice to the people that we meet, to our own self, the loving kindness to our own self, the loving kindness to people that we meet, and situations that we get into. And just be willing to continue to steadily go forward in that. Just steadily continue on. And that really is what endless training is. Just that open willingness to deal with what arises for us. To just patiently go through it and deal with it. The 10 vows of Samanta Bhadra are things that we're actually doing in our practice. The first one is to pay homage to all the Buddhas. The second one is to praise all Buddhas. The third one is to give generously. The fourth one is to repent misdeeds and confess our faults. The fifth is to rejoice in the merits of others, and merits and virtues of others. The sixth is to request the Buddhas to continue to teach. It's really kind of deeply important that we continue to ask the Buddha to help us, and to ask the Dharma to help us, and to ask the Sangha to help us. And that really is part of what this requesting the Buddhists to teach is. There's a tradition in Buddhism where, say, before when someone goes to a teacher, they're ideally should ask three times before the teacher will actually begin to teach them. When I went to Shasta Abbey to be ordained as a monk, I was, just before I was ordained, I was a postulant for 6 or so months, you know, kind of wearing robes, had short hair, and lived with the community, but hadn't ordained yet. Over that period of 6 months, I was asked a couple of times, well, do you still want to do this? Do you want to be ordained? And I said yes. And the second time I said yes. And then the third time, we were having community tea, and River Master G was there. And she asked, I was there with another person who was being ordained, who was going to be ordained with me. She asked first Reverend Alethea if she wanted to be ordained, and she said yes. And then she asked me if I wanted to be ordained, and I sort of laughed and said, well, I don't think it's not that I want to be ordained, it's that I need to be ordained. And she kind of got this sort of serious look on her face and sort of nodded. And then later, one of her chaplains, or Master Daisu, as it turns out, came to me and said, now, I'm pretty sure what that was about, but you know, I want to make sure that nobody's, you know, kind of twisting your arm or anything like that, and, you know, you're not kind of unduly influenced by the vice abbot or anything like that. And I said, oh, no, nothing like that's going on. I just feel internally that there's some part of me that really needs to be to take ordination, and so it's my wish to be ordained. He said, oh, good. This really impressed me because it really made me think they're really taking this quite seriously. And so it's something that we should kind of bear in mind that this is a significant thing. The seventh vow of Samantabhadra is to request the Buddhas to remain in the world. Again, it's just the Buddhas are just kind of responding to the Buddhas and the Buddha Dharma is sort of responding to our need, our wish. And it's really not going to try to force itself on anyone. We need to be sort of actively saying, you know, as we do with the temple, we need to be actively supporting the temple. We need to be actively asking the Buddhas to appear in the world and help us. To follow the Buddha Dharma at all times, to accommodate and benefit all beings, and to transfer merit to all. So again, these are just things that are kind of embedded in our practice, and they help to focus our minds in practice. So there's a little bit about Samantabhadra and the idea of continuing to go on in training. Now, today's ceremony, as I said, is called recognition. And this, you know, we started off by hearing the precepts from a human being with the reading of the precepts. We then made a commitment to the precepts with the lay ordination ceremony. And again, the lay ordination ceremony has all of these different facets, all the different Jukai ceremonies embedded in the lay ordination ceremony. So you won't be missing any of these elements that we're talking about. We made our commitment to the precepts. Then we did Sangha. We did our contrition and conversion. We said, you know, gosh, here I am. I've really, in the past, I've made mistakes, and I'm willing to look at them and do what I can to correct them and change those faults in myself. And then we looked at the Kechimyaku ceremony, the going on beyond, and always becoming Buddha, the following where the precepts lead, and not being too worried about how the twists and turns of our practice and path go. So we've learned basically how to keep the precepts, how to practice, how to train ourselves in the way. And at this ceremony, we're doing something slightly different, although it's an important element of our practice, and we need to, I think, be mindful of it and remember it. What happens at this particular ceremony, this recognition ceremony, is that everyone gathers into the Buddha Hall at the Abbey. The altar has again been cleared of the statues and all the adornments. So there's an empty altar. They actually spread a carpet on top of the altar. The altar is quite large. It's about 5.5 feet tall and about 10 feet deep and maybe 20 feet long. Okay. So what happens is everybody kind of comes into the hall in silence. The hall is darkened. There's a little bit of light on the altar, but it's pretty much dark. Groups of people walk. The lay people are sitting in the center, and you'll notice that there are monks sitting all around the hall. I'm going to describe this one in detail because it's quite significant. So everybody's settled. I think there might be three bows at the beginning. We all do three bows together. And then a group of lay people is asked to stand up. The newly ordained lay people is asked to stand up. And they go up as a group of 10 and climb up on the altar and kneel there. And then from the lights come on in the founder shrine, which sits behind the altar. And the three abbots that were at the other ceremonies are there. And they say, Buddha bows to Buddha. Buddha recognizes Buddha. And they say that three times and everybody bows to each other. So the ordinands are sitting up on the altar. The abbots are sitting in the founder shrine and they bow to each other. Then the abbots come out of the founder shrine and process around the altar saying, Buddha bows to Buddha. Buddha recognizes Buddha. Go around Mount Sumeru. Go around the Buddha. Buddha bows to Buddha. Buddha recognizes Buddha. Go around Mount Sumeru. Go around the Buddha. With their monk staff, and they're making noise and bashing on the floor. So in other words, they're circumambulating you. They're paying homage to you. Because as I said before, when you take the precepts, in the ordination ceremony it says, when we take the three refuges, we attain to the rank of a lay Buddhist. And that's the tradition throughout the Buddhist world. When we go to the Sangha for refuge and we take the three refuges, we attain the rank of lay Buddhist. When we take the 16 precepts, we actually attain the rank, in our view, of the Buddha. We attain the rank of Buddha. We become children of the Buddha, as Reverend Master Jia puts it. We become baby Buddhas. And so what we're doing in this ceremony of recognition is that we're saying, no, really, you are Buddha. Okay? It's not just us. It's not just the statue. It's not just Shakyamuni Buddha. It's you. By making the commitment to the precepts, you are giving expression to Buddhahood. Okay? So we do this circumambulation. That group comes down. The next group goes up. And all the lay trainees that are there climb up on the altar and are recognized in this way. Come back down. And then once everyone's been up on the altar, all the monks stand up and they all have little bells and start ringing bells and going around all of the lay trainees who are sitting in the center of the hall. Go around the Buddha. Go around Mount Sumeru. Buddha bows to Buddha. Buddha recognizes Buddha. So not only the abbots are representing Shakyamuni Buddha, Samantabhadra, and Avalokiteshvara, but all the Sangha is recognizing that you have attained the rank of the Buddha. And there's an interesting little description. Typically, there'll be four conch shells being played during this part of the ceremony. And the conch shell is the symbol of the voice of the eternal. And Reverend Master Jiu in her comments says that this is to let all the Buddhists and practitioners in other worlds know that a new group of people have become Buddhas. Okay. So we're kind of making this proclamation to the world. To me, this is deeply important and significant, and something that we need to... that we need to kind of remind ourselves of every now and then. There's an idea that Dogen gives expression to where he says, we must first of all believe deeply that right where our feet are planted is where the way is. Right where we are sitting, right what we're doing right now is where the Dharma happens, is where the way is where the path is. It's not someplace off, you know, in some ideal state. It's right here in this place. And we have the tools now, we have the ability now to train where we are and to find the truth right where we are. So to me, there is this aspect of having been recognized in the past, you know, like everybody's saying, good job. But there's also a part of this which comes to us as another element of how we can practice. There's a kind of thing about having confidence in the Dharma, having confidence in the practice. And part of that confidence comes from both our experience of putting the teaching into practice, but also from the teaching itself. Dogen is saying, right where you are exactly right now, you can practice. You can make the teaching come alive. And you can help yourself to let go of suffering. You have that ability. You can't really change the external circumstances, and you don't have to. You can apply the Dharma in the place where you are, with the body and mind that you have. And so, this, again, there's an element of this which is something that we can put into practice. It's not something that we need to believe in a way. It's just something we can do. Okay, well, what does that mean? Dogen says, the way is right here. How can I make use of that? How can I prove that true for myself? So that's the recognition ceremony. Again, I think it's quite important. I'm not aware of another tradition which has this ceremony in it, this type of ceremony, actually having the lay trainees climb up on the altar and saying, you are Buddhas. So to me, it's one of the really valuable parts of our tradition. Now, the third thing I want to talk about this morning is another ceremony that's often done at Jukai. I don't know if it's done traditionally in the East, but they've begun to do it at Shasta Abbey, and I think it's quite useful, which is the ceremony of the renewal of vows. It should be said that many lay trainees go to Jukai kind of year after year. Even after they've taken the precepts, they'll go back and go back and go back. And it's a common thing. And part of that is their wish to renew their commitment to practice. Now, in a monastic community, it is often done there's a tradition in Buddhist monasticism of reciting the monastic rules every fortnight, every 2 weeks. And that ceremony is kind of referred to in our tradition as the renewal of vows. So we will remind ourselves of the precepts and how to practice the precepts. There will be in the renewal of vows ceremony that they do at Shasta Abbey and is traditional in Soto Zen in Japan. There's a confession verse. There's a recitation of the precepts. There is... And there are the reaffirmation of the Bodhisattva vows and the veneration of the Buddhas. And so it's worthwhile to remember that this is something that we can renew for ourselves. One of the things we haven't talked about is that in our tradition, the precepts are referred to as the Bodhisattva precepts. And that by keeping the precepts, we are giving expression to the Bodhisattva aspiration and the Bodhisattva principles. The Bodhisattva vows specifically are, however innumerable beings may be, I vow to save them all. However inexhaustible the passions may be, I vow to transform them all. However limitless the Dharma may be, I vow to comprehend it completely. However infinite the Buddha's truth is, I vow to realize it. And so embedded within our 16 precepts are those principles. Embedded within our path are those principles. And again, so for the renewal of vows ceremony, we'll come back to and recite those things. We'll remind ourselves of how to practice and remind ourselves of what our intention in it is in practice. So again, that's done Echukai. I think that's about all I have to say on those topics. It's a little shorter than past ones, but your Master Represent has something to add.
I'm afraid not today. I don't seem to have anything to add. If people have any questions...
I think the only thing that came up for me is part of the getting back to Samantabhadra. Mm-hmm. I think it was like the third vow. When I heard that, like that confession type of thing, and like that sin, it brought me back to, either, you know, with Protestantism or Catholicism, with that, you know, going into the booth and like, you know, confession or something.
Right.
And I don't know. I guess that's, it's like, I know that we all are working on ourselves, but that to me, it just strikes a real, you know, is something that I go, this is too much like what I came from, you know,
sure.
That I'm trying, you know, we're not all inherently bad. And so if there's anything you can speak to about that, and I'm not saying make me feel better about it, but I recognize that it does strike a chord within me there. So there's maybe the differences or similarities.
It's really, 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 really important to remember that practicing the Buddha Dharma is on some level completely different than looking at life through the lens of the Abrahamic religions. It's just completely different. And one of the main differences is that idea of original sin, that idea of an original fault, and the way that we look at faults. So it's really pretty useful to just continue to remind ourselves that we have been really conditioned by that way of thinking. To think that there's something fundamentally wrong with us. So part of our, and then to compassionately recognize that that thought is a mistake. It's a mistake to think that there's something fundamentally wrong with us. So there is what I'm talking about confessing misdeeds. It's not that it's bad, it's just something that will lead to suffering. And so we can by looking at that and thinking, I've bought into that idea. That's a mistake. I'm going to work on letting that go. I'm going to work on converting that idea. Because the Buddha teaches, and my intuition says, that's not true. It's just not true. So we look at ourselves and we think, okay. And we look at ourselves and we think, I am limited. I do have the potential for creating suffering for others. And to just, with compassion and deep acceptance, be willing to just accept that and say, that's sobering, and accept that and trust that there is that deeper thing. We are Buddha by nature. We do have Buddha nature. That is our fundamental nature. It's not defiled. It's not impure. Original sin is a misunderstanding. And then to go on from there. And the more deeply we trust in that deeper part of ourselves, the more deeply we take refuge in that, the easier it is to let go of the fear that our misdeeds mean that there's original sin. Our misdeeds just mean that there's ignorance. And that's what our job is to correct.
I guess ignorance and habits, right?
Yeah. That's all they mean.
I talked to River Master once about the word confession, mm-hmm. asking if it would be similar or the same thing or acceptable to use acceptance. And she said it was. So we're simply accepting the delusion that we are sinful. And that's not to say that we don't make mistakes. We do. But that it's somehow evil, or that we need to be judgmental. In other words, when we confess our judgmentalism, it's a willingness to work on not judging ourselves.
Right.
Quite literally.
Yeah, and I think that's part of where it kind of resonated with me is there's that judging of myself, and it's like, you know, it's so hard sometimes to give yourself that compassion, and it just kind of takes me back a step, you know,
so when you,
mentally. And
when you use that word, confession, and you add judgmentalism to it, right there,
right,
you've made a mistake in Buddhism. And when you use that word, confession, and you add that judgmentalism to it, you need to confess that you have added that judgmentalism to it. You need to accept that that's part of your own habit of creating suffering for yourself and others.
Sorry.
You need
it's
to...
It's supposed to be off.
It's okay.
You need to be... It is helpful to be willing to work on letting go of that judgmentalism rather than getting involved in it and beating yourself up about it. And when you find you're involved in it, beating yourself up about it, that's a confession as well. Oh, look, I'm doing this again. So it's not confessing, I'm evil, wicked, bad, and nasty, no,
yeah.
Punish me, or whatever. It has
nothing
to do with that. And at least for Westerners, it seems to take an enormous stretch to be willing to start, to even admit the possibility of letting go of judgmentalism.
I think it's so deep-seated. It's been there for so long,
and
if you grow up in a culture that way.
And that's where the confession, literally, the acceptance comes in. Because until you do confess it, accept it, what can you do about it? If you don't see it, if you don't recognize it in your daily life, there's nothing you can do about it. That's my experience anyway. And it took a real leap of faith for me to stop judging myself and just to keep training without that constant overview, that constant... like somebody... I mean, there were two people here, somebody training and somebody watching this person train. It's not helpful.
Yeah.
You know, just get on with it. Just do what needs to be done. And you really don't need to constantly beat yourself up about it. Now, that doesn't mean you don't do your best to recognize what you're doing and when you make mistakes. But once you recognize that you have made a mistake and re-pledge yourself to doing something about that mistake, let it go. Let it go.
Confessions in those terms seem to have the same connotation of being willing to accept the fact that you could be wrong. Is that...
Yeah.
Or to accept the fact you could be right.
And ultimately...
Depends on the particular koan.
Right.
You know?
The thing I was just thinking is that, and again, this is something we've been talking about, there isn't anything wrong with being a human being. There just isn't. It's just all right. We can just be a human being. We don't have to be a god. We don't have to be perfect. We can just be a human being and have all the things that happen to human beings. And the Dharma isn't trying to make us into something other than just a regular person. The Dharma is for human beings to practice. So when we're, and I think about this I get trapped in this a lot where, you know, Samantabhadra's vows and think, oh God, I'm never going to make it. I'm so unworthy. But then I think, wait, you know, Samantabhadra, he doesn't care. He just says, okay, you're a human being. These vows are for human beings. That's what the love of the unborn signifies. And so when we're kind of looking at ourselves and we're making mistakes, you're thinking, oh God, I made another mistake. Well, okay, so you made another mistake. What can you do to make that better, or maybe just let it go.
Thank you.
And something Reverend Leon just said is really important. The Buddha Dharma is for human beings, as well as all beings, but especially for human beings. We're lucky enough to be in a particular state where we can hear it. That's not necessarily true of others. So, you know, if you think it's beyond you, that's a delusion. And what you're doing is trapping yourself in, you're creating an obstacle. All you have to do is take the next step. That's all you have to do. That's the Buddha Dharma.
You were talking about the place where we are right now being a step along the path, that we don't have to reject life. We don't have to say, oh, well, I'll start practicing after this gets resolved or something like that. What if there's something going on that's just deeply unjust or unfair, and it just seems impossible to accept it?
There it is. That's sort of, to me, I mean, like thinking about my own life right now, that's sort of, you know, there it is. That's life. It's like the world is broken. There's always going to be something like that. And yet, there's a story I've been thinking about lately about Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the regarder of the cries of the world, who, you know, kind of appears sometimes as a thousand-armed figure. And this, I think I have this right. I probably don't, but forgive me. There's a point where Avalokiteshvara is looking at the world and seeing suffering and feeling deep grief about the suffering of the world and her inability to do anything about it. And this grief caused her to break apart into a thousand pieces, caused her heart to shatter into a thousand pieces. And these thousand pieces manifest as the thousand arms of Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara just sits still and regards the cries of the world. And in that sitting still, with things which she can't fix overtly, something changes, something happens. There is compassion, and there's a way to respond to it. She might not be able to change the way the world is, how deeply unfair it is, but she can bring compassion to it. And that's what we have the opportunity to do in practice. We may not be able to fix the brokenness of ourselves or the world, but we can bring training to it. And that changes it. That makes it different. That makes it able to be born.
What better time to train than when things are unhappy and are unfair, or suffering is manifesting itself? There's no better time to be still. I think I've read, almost everyone here has heard me read that story about the man in Nazi Germany who literally watched his family machine gun in front of him, literally. And he decided at that point to train with that. I mean, you can't imagine anything much more awful than that. And he made that his training. He turned it, he decided at that point to love everyone. Now, that's what training is. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying this is easy. There's nothing easy about training. I told every one of you at your orientation that it wouldn't be easy. But that's what training is sitting still in the midst of unfairness, of suffering, of pain. Now again, that doesn't mean that you don't do anything about it. That's part of the acceptance. There are things that there are some things that you need to do something about, but part of the sitting still is sitting still enough to clearly see whether in fact you need to do something about it. And you are not responsible for repairing the world. In fact, you will not succeed at repairing the world. Now, that does not mean, again, that there are not times when it is not good, when it is not very important to try. But we need to be very still. And the trying needs to come out of our heart. It doesn't come from the selfish self. When the trying comes from the selfish self, we're going to create suffering for ourselves and others. That's just the way it is. Sometimes we need to do it anyway and accept the suffering that we create. That's part of training as well. And we just do the best that we can. And we need to be willing not to judge that. We need to be willing to accept that and to learn from it. And sometimes in not judging it, sometimes in accepting and learn from it, we see, whoa, I blew that one. Well, fine, you learned something. Don't do it again. And if you do it again, well, there you get another chance to look at it. And then don't do it again. And if you do it again, fine, you got a third chance. And however, the Buddha has infinite patience, is willing to wait until we actually learn our lesson. There's no cutoff point here, thank goodness. And the negative side of that is it takes as long as we're in this until we do something about it. And it's up to us. It's up to us. When we let go of our greeds, hates, and delusions, then these awful, unfair situations become more clear.
Yeah, it's not like they stop being awful and unfair. They just become more clear. And by sitting still in it and bringing compassion to it, somehow they shift. And they may not like look like they're shifting, but our own relationship to it shifts and something changes.
And part of our training is a willingness to have faith that that will happen and not to get... What tends to happen to most human beings is when we see a situation that's unfair or whatever, we become so uncomfortable, we feel that we have to do something. It doesn't have much to do with the other person in a sense. It's our own pain we're trying to deal with. What training is a willingness to sit still in the midst of our own discomfort. And out of that arises the if we're sitting still enough, out of that arises the wisdom to see what the next step is. And it may not be clear that it's wisdom. It may not be this, words written in the sky or something. But out of it arises a stillness that helps us, that lets us take the next step. And we need to be willing to have the faith that that happens, even to us. And it does. And again, I'm not saying that it is necessarily, somehow... I'm not saying there's no confusion there. I'm not saying that there is words written in the sky. I can't think of a better. It's just we have a feeling for what needs to be done here. And if we're still, if we're letting go of, I can't stand it, which is really very selfish, even though we feel like we're doing it for someone else. As long as we're acting from that, I can't stand it, we're probably going to create suffering for ourselves and others. So part of our training is to sit still in the midst of our own and others' suffering and be willing to go forward from that.
share something?
Sure.
I know this is probably going to sound pretty bad, but I've never told anybody this, but what brought me really to Buddhism, my husband kept getting deployed, and I got hooked on prescription painkillers, and it was a long road, and I almost lost my kids, and for 8 years now, I've been practicing as best as I could. I know you say I read too much, but I got away from
we
the painkillers, and the strongest thing I take is aspirin, but that's what brought me to Buddhism, and talking about the mistakes and the confessions, and it was a very hard road for me.
Interestingly enough, addiction, in a sense, is a gift because it can be clearly seen. This causes problems. And what we all have is we're all addicted to certain behaviors. We're all addicted to various greeds. We're all addicted to various hates or angers or pushing things away. We're all addicted to various delusions. And part of our training is a willingness to see that we're addicted, to confess our addictions, and to work on letting go of them. And unfortunately, some people find that difficult to see. We all find it difficult to see some aspects of some of our habits.
It's embarrassing. That's the realness.
Yeah, well, it's embarrassing. To most of it, it's common to be embarrassed. And part of that is just, we recognize we're creating suffering for ourselves and for others, and we don't want to do that. But there you go. There's something quite powerful about just being willing to say, okay, I did it. I'm an idiot. and just accepting that and being embarrassed and feeling that and just then going on and saying, well, I don't really want to do that anymore. And
that's where the training comes in. That's where the strength comes in. That's where, I don't really want to do that anymore. I mean, it's so easy. So many beings just keep doing it. And in a sense, we need to have compassion for those beings because they really are trying. They're trying to deal with their suffering in the best way they know how. And sometimes that's drugs. I feel better. Unfortunately, it doesn't last. And the Buddha Dharma does.
I was watching a television show about drugs and all different kinds of pharmaceuticals and illicit drugs as well. And the show reminded me that all these drugs come from plants. And they're really just plants that someone found helpful in some way. And then they cultivated the plant in such a way to make it more helpful with even less of the plant. And then found chemical techniques to make it even more helpful, stronger and more concentrated. And that's all it is. And in a way, I think our habits are the same way, like, oh, well, if I stand up to this bully, then they're not going to bother me anymore. And then I make that habit even a stronger habit and cultivate it and extract it and distill it and make it even stronger. So to the point where I just want to walk down dark alleys so I can find people to punch. Because it was helpful at one time. Really helpful.
You got it. That's what we do to ourselves. And we really are trying to help. It just leads... It's following delusion rather than the truth.
That's exactly what River Master Jiu means by suffering starts out as slightly saddened love, where we do something out of love, and then we do that same thing in a slightly different situation where maybe wasn't such a good idea, and then we gradually find ourselves walking down dark alleys so we can beat people up.
Look, to me it reminds me of, we're given these gifts in life. We have blessings, whatever you want to call them. They come from Buddha nature. And then we distort, we make them selfish. And I can see how we put us into it. and then it definitely changes and changes and changes.
And good, and it's just that us that we put into it that we really need to see, because the selfish self is the source of our suffering. And we need to be careful when we confess that, mm-hmm. that there's no judgment
right.
in that. Just recognize that something really is trying desperately to help. And that's the wonderful thing about the Buddha Dharma. It really can lead us to doing something about it on a permanent basis, and not just picking these things that help for a short period of time, or seem to help for a short period of time, and eventually get us in deep trouble.
And it's also really important to remember, there's a thing that River Master Jiyu said, and this goes to the keeping of the precepts. She described this in her book, Wild White Goose, where she said at a certain point she realized she had to give up. She felt like a centipede with wash rags in each hand trying to clean itself. We try to make ourselves perfect, and we will never succeed in that. There will always be a place where we just need to sit still and allow things to be as they are. And that is where Manjushri comes into the picture. We need to be willing to look at ourselves and just accept that it is of the human nature to be addicted to things. And while we deeply long to correct those faults, we may not be able to do so. And that is not a cause for despair. That is not a cause to stop practicing. That is not a cause to think that the Buddha Dharma is incorrect or that we have original sin. It just means there are deep habits which we may not be able to address right now, and that we will in the long run address them by continuing on. The Buddha Dharma is for human beings just like us.
Thank goodness.
Just like us.
So go home and do it. And we wish you well.